The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Welcome to Wheels Up Wednesday, August 14th, 61 degrees on our way to about 87 or so today. I hope you're doing well so far this morning. You can join the conversation at 770-5633-770-KMED. Sorry I was off yesterday. It was kind of a last-minute thing. Had some family issues, medical issues to work through. Everyone's fine. You know, a lot of people were kind of wondering about that. I appreciate the kind words on Facebook, but everything's just fine. Sometimes things just happen, and you got to work through a few things, and it's just not conducive to coming in here and doing and talking with you because there are just too many other details to take care of. But everything is just fine, all right? Anyway, it's 11 minutes after 6. And so we're here for the duration, at least this morning. Okay. Wheels Up Wednesday with Eric Peters. He'll be with me in about a half hour. Great conversation on transportation and a lot more. Well, the inflation rate, they're saying, I guess they're now, everybody's focusing on the so-called official, you know, CPI inflation rate because the markets need more heroin from the Federal Reserve, which is cheap money. They need more cheap money. And so they're probably going to get it because the Fed is probably going to want to try to put a little boost under Kamala Harris. I don't know, because there's evidence that there's already been a slide into recession, and we'll probably end up correcting that over the last correcting that, according to a lot of the financial bloggers that I've been checking out here. But anyway, they're saying it's like 0.2% up in prices. The only challenge is that they don't really count the stuff that you and I and most people who are listening really pay attention to. 20% increase in insurance costs or even the ability to get insurance, you know, year over year. That doesn't get really counted as a core consumer price. A lot of food ends up being ignored. Well, you know, these are volatile, so we don't want to count food. It's just only used by 100% of the people that are actually living. You know, that kind of thing. The Fed is always about, when I talk about the Fed, not just the Federal Reserve, but the federal government is always about trying to make inflation appear, well, less bad than it really is, because the worse it is, then, okay, how are we going to do a reasonable Social Security boost? That's a big part. It's already in deficit right now. You know, more comes out or goes out than is coming in. And if you can gaslight the senior citizens that things are just fine, you're only losing money. Your money's only losing half its value every 24 years instead of maybe every 10 years or whatever the case might be. You know, those sort of things. But anyway, they'll be doing the happy talk. The market will most likely be doing a happy dance. I'll have to check the price of gold because gold is probably going to want to take another hike too, because essentially what they're going to do is cut interest rates and then inflation will roar again. The Fed's kind of boxed itself in just my opinion. I'm no expert on this kind of stuff, but I've read enough and watched these games for quite some time to understand how this game is played. All right. It is 13 minutes after 6. 770-5633 to join in. Hey, there was a story I heard on Town Hall News a little more than an hour ago. 5 o'clock this morning, I'm listening to this, and I'm wondering if Americans are smart enough, if there are enough smart Americans that can actually spot the political lie that Tim Walz is trying to gaslight the people with. I'm going to play this. It has to do with the stolen valor. This was from 5 o'clock a.m.'s Town Hall News.
Vice presidential candidate Tim Walz sidestepping the stolen valor allegations that have been dogging him. Those allegations gained momentum following remarks by Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance.
Vance made the comments last week, shortly after Vice President Kamala Harris picked the Minnesota governor as her running mate.
What bothers me about Tim Walz is the stolen valor garbage.
Vance questioned Walz's record and the implication he had served in a combat zone. Walz says he is proud of his service to his country.
You should never denigrate another person's service record. Anyone brave enough to put on that uniform for our great country, including my opponent, I just have a few simple words. Thank you for your service and sacrifice.
Okay. I want to play that last section of that story. Let me see if I can back it up here.
Had served in a combat zone. Walz says he is proud of his service to his country.
You should never denigrate another person's service record.
Okay. Wall said he's proud of his service record and you should never denigrate his service record. No one's denigrating. In fact, J.D. Vance wasn't denigrating his service record and his service. He wasn't that. He was denigrating lying about his service. How many Americans do you think will actually see through this charade? No one's denigrating that he was out there and serving in the National Guard. He had 24 years. He was doing something there, but he did ship out a couple of months before his unit deployed. And on his challenge coin when he was in Congress, he ended up putting a rank that he had not attained in the National Guard. So no one is going after his service. I mean, this is just total bullshit what this guy is trying to snow people with. So once again,
had served in a combat zone. Wall says he is proud of his service to his country.
You should never denigrate another person's service record. Anyone brave enough to put on that uniform for our great country, including my opponent, I just have a few simple words. Thank you for your service and sacrifice.
But J.D. Vance was not denigrating his service. J.D. Vance and others have been calling into question the lies and the exaggeration of the service. That's the issue. What percentage of Americans do you think will see through that BS? 770-5633. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Rhonda talks about her experience with Clouser Drilling.
Kevin came right out. The thing that really stood out to me, we could see the years of experience in the quality of their work. And that just showed us what great communication that they have. I wouldn't hesitate to recommend Clouser Well Drilling. They were great to work with.
Clouser Drilling has the experience and the equipment to handle the most challenging conditions. Visit ClouserDrilling.com. That's ClouserDrilling.com.
The model year-end closeout on new Iron Bull trailers continues at Two Dogs Fabricating. Iron Bull has instant rebates on remaining 2024 Iron Bull trailers while they last. There's an instant $750 rebate on 12 to 16-foot dump trailers and a $500 rebate on equipment trailers from 16 to 24 feet. The 2024 model year-end closeout on North Star-made Iron Bull trailers is for a limited time. So go pick out yours at Two Dogs Fabricating on Bryan Way, off Sage in Medford. Visit TwoDogsFab.com.
At Pressure Point Roofing, our dedicated team of repair and maintenance professionals work on hundreds of roofs a year. We can see where problems can start on your home or commercial property. We have the years of experience and commitment to quality that you need to protect your home or business. Having an annual inspection can prevent you from suffering through the damage, stress, and costs of an interior repair. Just like your car's oil change, preventative work can save you money and headaches. To schedule a repair and inspection or to learn more how a maintenance program can help you, visit PressurePointRoofing.com.
Hi, it's Jolene with Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros. We've got summer savings on quality Continental tires. Through August, get a $110 Visa prepaid card in the mail when you purchase a set of qualifying tires for your truck, SUV, or van. And there's 16 different popular styles to choose from, including Cross Contact, 4x4 Contact, Terrain Contact, and Premium Contact. Continental is one of our most recommended tire brands, so if you need a set for your truck, SUV, or van, come see us at Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros in Phoenix.
Hi, I'm Michael with Gage of Construction, and I'm on KMED.
18 minutes after 6. Once again, it was a little more than an hour from now, the story out there about Walls coming out and saying that he's proud of his service. And nobody should question anybody's service.
Walls says he is proud of his service to his country.
You should never denigrate another person's service record. Anyone brave enough to put on that uniform for our great country, including my opponent, I just have a few simple words. Thank you for your service and sacrifice.
And nobody is stopping anybody from saying thank you for your sacrifice, et cetera, et cetera. But notice how he didn't own it. He didn't say anything about the fact that he had just lied about or exaggerated or allowed other people to believe a different story about his service. That's the issue. And that's the part that I just can't believe that anybody could actually hear that statement and not see the lie of omission. And it happens so often within political news coverage, especially. And I'm hoping you got that. Cliff, did you hear the same thing or did it take a little bit to sink in on that situation? Good morning.
It didn't take any time to sink in.
Okay.
Yeah, I served during the Vietnam era. At no time have I ever intimated that I'm a Vietnam veteran. Never.
You served during the Vietnam era, right? That's the difference, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 68-71, I enlisted, and I did my time, mm-hmm. learned a lot, but I have never, ever stated I'm a Vietnam veteran.
Well, the media is doing its best to run cover for Tim Walz by not pointing out that what he said, what he had talked about, say, well, no one should be denigrating anyone's service. No one is denigrating his service. We're denigrating the fact that you're exaggerating your service, and that's a different kettle of fish. And well, I just don't know. Do you think that'll matter with most of the country, though? Does it matter when it comes to votes, you think?
I think it will matter with military servicemen who served overseas in a combat area.
Okay, well, there's a few hundred thousand of those in Pennsylvania and some of the other battleground states. Well, I might be able to move a needle or two, I suppose.
Yeah. Who knows?
All right. Hey, we'll see that. Thanks for the call there. Really appreciate that. Let me go to Dave. Hey, Dave, you were talking about the Valor issue, the stolen Valor still being a crime, right?
Yeah, it's still a crime. My dad was a corporal in the Army. He was in during Korea, but he didn't serve in combat. This would piss my dad off, claiming you're in a place that nobody shoot. Now, my dad was armed with a 45 because mm-hmm. he was in the Army Combat Engineers, but he never served in combat. And my dad would be turning over in his grave for what that guy just did, because people that have said, well, you were lucky that you didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
But thank you for your service.
Yeah, there you go. And that was it. Bottom line. Do you think it'll matter, though, in the election?
In today's society, I have no idea. Because, see, the people don't remember, the greatest generation that served in World War II. It's a distant memory if they ever even knew their grandparents.
All right. Interesting take on that. Thank you, Dave. 770-5633. We can talk about that. Anything else on your mind, too? Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome. Hello?
This is crazy.
Oh, hey, Gene. How you doing? What's going on?
Oh pretty good. I was just wondering, why do we vote for people that make us feel good about ourselves? Don't we do that? Oh, this person is probably dumber than I am, more dishonest than I am. So I want to vote for that person because that makes me look good.
Well, there is a certain amount of, both sides of the aisle are pretty good at that, telling everybody what they want to hear, right?
Oh, yeah, well, they work on it all the time. I mean, I guess they do nothing else because they don't do anything to make anything better.
Yeah, well, when it comes to inflation, I know they're talking about inflation a lot right now. Yeah. Both sides of the aisle, we're talking both presidential candidates, everything they talk about right now is inflationary. You do realize that, right?
Yeah. And they don't know what to do about it because they don't even understand what inflation is, the destruction of our money.
Yeah, but you have to buy the votes. It's the one type of vote. It's perfectly legal to buy via campaign promises. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, everybody tries to purchase another person to make sure that the other person don't have any freedom of their own.
Yeah. All right. Hey, thanks. Gene, good hearing from you as always. 770-5633, 770-KMED. Now, I mean, I don't want to sit there and just focus just on the stolen valor stuff, but it's just that one at 5 o'clock this morning, I'm listening to the news. Come on. Nobody is going after you for your service, Tim. They're going after you because of the exaggeration, the not correcting the record, the claiming a rank that you had not obtained before retiring, all these. That's what it was all about. That's what it was all about. Anyway. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome. This is Bill.
Hey, Bill. John in Medford.
Hey, John. What's going on?
Yeah, I'm ex-military. I didn't serve in Vietnam. I served after.
Oh, yeah?
I was a drummer in the Air Force band. But what Walz did is very offensive and disrespectful to veterans that did, put their life on the line and gave the ultimate sacrifice. But, Bill, it doesn't matter. None of this stuff matters.
Yeah.
Kamala's track record, which is zero, the fact that no one voted for her, doesn't matter. None of that matters. There's a deeper spiritual issue that's going on that has divided our house, our nation. Okay?
Oh, yeah. And I appreciate you talking about it on a deeper level because you are right. But the very fact that an inexperienced fraud, which is what I would term Kamala Harris, who right now, even as we speak right now, is being reinvented. In fact, I don't know if you get the Axios newsletter or not, John, do you?
No, sir.
Okay, this is the headline. This is the top of it this morning. Now, Axios is an inside the Beltway deal. This is what the chattering class and the Beltway types are going to be. You know, they read this more, and I read it too, okay? Vice President Harris, hoping to distance herself from President Biden's unpopularity on the economy, plans a new focus on middle-class worries and woes. Beginning in North Carolina this week with her first policy speech and continuing next week with the Democratic Convention in Chicago, Harris will tell Americans, most for the first time, who she is and how she'd govern. And she wants to break with Biden on issues which are unpopular, like rising prices. She wants to redefine herself. She'll outline plans to lower costs of health care, housing, and food for middle-class consumers and tell how she'll take on corporate price gouging. Now, this is the takeaway. They kind of buried the lead in it, John. A big part of the Harris plan is to unapologetically change some of her more liberal positions and claim that her White House experience helped change her mind. Yes, when she was running for president in 2019, she was against fracking. She was for decriminalizing illegal border crossings and for single-payer health care. But no more. She's going to back away from that. And she's even in favor of no taxes on tips, even though she was the tie-breaking vote for the IRS to go after tips. So there we go, John. That's the world that we're in right now. Okay?
Right. And Bill, this is the crux of the matter. You see, you've got kind of a house divided. You know, it says in the Bible, a house divided cannot stand.
Yeah.
And we're like 50-50. You've got feelings-based, emotional-based people versus people that can look at things in more reality and more objective. You've got Donald Trump. You know, like him or not like him, he is kind of like that stern father that kind of holds his children to task. He holds people to task, okay? And this is sparking up the people that want to do the alternative lifestyles. You know, they're in fear. Most women live in a state of fear
on a
daily basis.
You think so?
Okay?
Okay.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And so this is what you've got. You've got this problem where it's kind of like mass hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And people want to believe the lie that they believe. So the battle lines are already drawn, you know, trying to shame Kamala or Waltz for his service isn't going to move the needle for anyone that's already decided that they can't handle the threat of someone like a stern father type figure like Donald Trump.
But yet, honestly, Donald may have that image, but he hasn't really governed that way. He didn't really govern that way in 2020, 2024. My gosh, you know, cities burned and he wouldn't, you know, he didn't really crack down on it back at that time. You remember?
Right. This is why this is such a cluster and why it's hard for people to really wrap their psyche around what doesn't make sense on the other side. Because he demonstrated that he's not going to do the things that the Democrats are causing people to fear that he will do.
Right. I mean, how many LGBTQ log cabin Republicans and all this other stuff? And my gosh, even the United Auto Workers. I mean, it was like a half Democrat RNC. Did you notice that? What was going on there and how traditional conservatism was taking a real backseat? And in this whole big tent thing, it's just a matter of how left are we going to go in 2024?
Right. And again, Bill, none of it matters. I actually, for the first time this week, have a deep concern that she's going to win. It defies all logic, all reason, all past history with Donald Trump, but I have a concern about it just because of this mind screw emotional-based people are under and the fact that they will believe what the media tells them. This is a master plan.
I would agree with you. I've come up with the same sort of concern. And it's not a fait accompli, My concern, though, is I'm seeing nothing coming back from the Trump campaign. And I mean nothing. I'll give you just a small example right now. You go on YouTube every now and then for videos. Do you do that?
All the time.
Okay. Most people do. A lot of people do that. All right. Have you ever seen a Trump ad?
No, actually, I haven't.
Nor have I. But I've seen tons of Kamala Harris and Democrat-leaning ads. Tons of that. And I'm thinking to myself, all right, what are you guys doing, you know, over there right now? Do you think all you have to do is put television ads on Fox and everything's going to be okay? You know, those are the people that are mostly already going to be voting for you. And I was reading how the Trump campaign is talking, well, gosh, you know, it was a sucker punch to have, you know, Joe Biden taken out and Kamala put in. Now, listen, this has been the concern right from the beginning. Are you trying to tell me that there was no one in the Trump organization that had any kind of idea that there was a possibility that Joe would be backed out intentionally? What you didn't have a backup plan? The entire plan was only about Joe, and now that Joe's gone, you have no weight, you have no plan? That doesn't make sense at all, does it?
Until we put ourselves in the shoes of people that truly live in fear that they're going to lose their alternative lifestyle, sexual preferences, and the big one, Bill, is abortion. I mean, abortion and voting against Donald Trump, even though I actually have dialogue with women that are liberal and, you know, they'll slam Trump and I'll say, well, what don't you like about him? And they'll say, oh, I just don't like him. I say, yeah, but tell me exactly what you don't like. And they can't answer the question and they'll tend to just jump out, they'll bail, they'll hang up because they don't really have any substance. This is what I'm talking about. It's emotional based. It's fear that they're going to take my right to basically murder my baby.
Yeah, that's what reproductive freedom is. That's what freedom is. Freedom, right?
Free to do whatever you damn well please, but that's kind of the lifestyle that we've devolved into.
Yeah, it is a spiritual battle right now and being lost at the moment. John, I appreciate the thoughtfulness and appreciate your call.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, 6:32. We'll catch up on some other news here from Bill London. And then after that, Wheels Up Wednesday. Eric Peters has some great journalism we're going to kick around here on Wheels Up Wednesday.
One of each, Forte Ben 807
on Union Avenue in Grants Pass.
Good morning. This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
Oh, I can't believe this laughable article. I got to tell Eric about this one. Eric Peters, automotive journalist and genius at epautos.com. Eric, I was just reading an article that made me laugh out loud. And
I could use one.
I know you could appreciate this one. You know Nike, of course. Nike, the multi-billion dollar Just Do It corporation. But they're now being set on fire by the gangrenes out there because Nike's private jet emissions are up despite vows to cut carbon and it because climate action regards urgent. It demands urgent action. And they're even saying that that their private jets last year emitted almost 20% more carbon pollution. Now, see, they lost me right there the moment they started talking about carbon dioxide as carbon pollution, the same gas you and I are breathing out, everybody else who is listening is breathing out, and the same gas that the indoor growers, like the dope growers, the marijuana growers, and also indoor greenhouse people pipe into their businesses to make the plants grow more. And we're just supposed to ignore this, right? We're just supposed to believe this stuff.
There's some really good news here, though. They've got the ideal footwear to just, you know, go there by foot.
That's right. Maybe you brought up something there. You know, in the future, full-on communist revolution, the Nike executives will just be walking around in Nike wear instead, right?
Exactly. There you go. Easy solution.
Yeah, live your principles. Do it as... anyway, Saul Alinsky. We'll do Saul Alinsky tactics, right? Hey, you got to do that. Let's talk, though, about some stuff that you have been writing about, and epautos.com, just great, great stuff. I wanted to talk first off with Prepper's Dilemma. I really enjoyed that. I was reading that last night, and we've talked about this a little bit. You're actually in the process of maybe getting another vehicle to add to your stable, but you wanted to have something that would be great for any kind of emergency preparedness or if there was fuel shortages and things like that. And you ended up settling on a, would you call it a gray market vehicle that you're thinking about getting imported? Is that what they call it?
Well, oh boy, it's I'm on the thorns of a dilemma. I am considering violating my prime directive, which is to never go into debt. All my adult life, I've done my best to live below my means so as to not have any debt and to therefore not be as dependent and beholden to corporations and also at the mercy of the government.
Okay.
But the times, they are changing, aren't they? And, there's a dealer near me that specializes in oddball stuff, including right-hand drive JDM export market stuff that we can't get here because of the federal government. And they have for sale a 91 model Toyota Land Cruiser 70. And for those not familiar, that's as analog as it gets. It's got a diesel non-turbo mechanically injected engine, a manual transmission, manual four-wheel drive, leaf springs up front and in back.
Wow. In other words, this is a rugged vehicle. This is not the passenger-style 4Runner that we know of in the United States,
yeah,
right?
It's back in the days when they made 4x4s instead of SUVs, to actually be used. These are the unkillable models that you see everywhere in the undeveloped world, as they refer to it.
Yeah, are these the same ones that they also put the machine guns on the back? Or is that the Hilux?
Because they can take a machine gun blast and keep on going, unless you put a 50 caliber through the block.
That's what I thought. You see terrorist movies, and there they are. Here's the Toyota Hilux, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, but the point is, this is something that will just run and run and run, that will run on practically any fuel, too, which is a really important consideration, I think, given the times that we're living in. It's not one of these finicky modern diesels that has DEF particulate traps and all of that stuff. And because it doesn't have a turbo, you can basically feed it practically any fuel oil and it will run.
You could put probably corn oil in there, right? To an extent,
you could,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. The only thing you'd have to, because I
started.
Yeah. The only thing. Yeah. Will it start on that? That Vanagon diesel of mine will do the same thing. And you do have to be a little careful when it comes to lubricity. Make sure there's enough to lubricate the pump, in the oil.
Yep.
That kind of thing.
Yep.
But yeah, in a pinch, there's all sorts of things you can do.
Yeah, it's just a very, very simple, very repairable in a pinch, a kind of vehicle that you can adapt things to if you need to, if you can't find parts. And I don't know, given everything that's going on, the thought of getting a vehicle like that, much as I love my little Nissan pickup truck, is very appealing just because it may become difficult to keep a modern so-called vehicle operating reliably and regularly in the weeks, years, and months ahead.
Okay, well, with this prepper Toyota that you're thinking about, think about the upside of this, Eric, because let's say that, we end up going into, prepper kind of world, or if you want to call it, what was that Mel Gibson movie?
Mad Max.
Mad Max.
Yeah, let's hope it doesn't go that way.
Okay, let's say if we go into Mad Max with your vehicle, you are the warlord. You're the area warlord now in Virginia.
Well,
all right?
If things go that bad, we're really all going to be out of luck, and I don't think anybody's going to be driving anywhere. What I'm hopeful for, what seems more likely is that we're just going to experience a very prolonged period of malaise and impoverishment. And, you never know whether we're going to wake up next week and find out that the money we've got in the bank has been confiscated by the bank or is worthless because of Weimar-style inflation. So investing in things that have tangible value that you physically possess strikes me as a not foolish thing to do.
Okay. So what does it actually cost, something like this import, this 33-year-old Toyota, which is practically bulletproof?
Well, remarkably, and now I have to preface this by saying the thing only has 20-something thousand miles on it, and they want $24,000 for it.
Oh, $24,000.
Which, is how much is a new Land Cruiser, the one that I reviewed the other week or a couple of weeks back, which is half the price of the new one that has electric power steering, mild hybrid, yada, yada, this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah, you'd have to spend close to $50,000 for a new one, but it won't have the capabilities of this 1991 import, will it?
Well, no, it won't have the capability for you to fix it. New vehicles have a lot of good points. One of them is not by the side of the road repairability.
Sure.
They work great until they don't work. And when they don't work, you call the truck because more than likely you're not going to be able to deal with whatever's gone wrong with it.
Okay. So $24,000, but you probably don't have $24,000 cash, right? So you're going to have to borrow something.
So, I debate whether I ought to consider financing it, and I haven't fully decided yet. I'm just very conservative on this stuff. But, I just thought it was a very interesting proposition. And by the way, Among the other gems they have at this place, they have a 78 Mustang II King Cobra. Remember those?
Oh, yes, I do.
This one's mint, immaculate, has very low miles. They're wanting $32,000 for it, which 10 years ago would have been absurd and laughable. You know, the Mustang IIs were derided when they were new. Now they're looking pretty doggone appealing, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, at least you can still wrench them yourself, no problem, right?
Yeah, and modify them. There's all sorts of things. You know, and as I wandered through the showroom, they have basically a gigantic warehouse. They have hundreds of vehicles. I was just reminded of the great diversity, to use that much-abused word, that we used to just take for granted, when even little cars, little economy cars, were just interesting. You know, they had odd styling and they had cool features. There was difference, you know, and it made them so appealing compared to the homogenous compliance vehicles that are were shoved down our throats today.
All right. Now, Eric, though, back to the Prepper's Dilemma story that you have here, though. About how much would you have to borrow to make this happen?
I'm not exactly sure, but I'm thinking probably in something in the neighborhood of 10 to 15.
10 to 15 is that's not too bad, all right? And here's the other way of looking at it, all right? That let's say that things do go pear-shaped, right? Who's going to go and collect from you? Who's going to come collect?
You know, that's true. And again, I chafe at that a little bit because I like to pay my bills.
I know.
You know, I'm not. But you're right. You know, we could arrive at a point where all bets are off, and I'm not sure it's necessarily a bad thing to feel guilty about not handing over money to these giant corporate conglomerates. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, let's put it this way. Like, if Little Rocket Man starts lobbing, you know, rockets into the United States at some point and all of a sudden, you know, takes out financial centers, it's really, really bad. Don't get me wrong. But, you don't sweat the credit card payment in a situation like that.
Yeah, do you remember the end of Fight Club? Remember the end of Fight Club?
No, I don't. Tell me. I never saw the movie. If you can believe that, I never saw it. Okay.
Oh, you got to see it. It's a great movie. At the end of the movie, the so-called terrorist, the character in the movie, grenades all the buildings that have the financial records of everybody. So, like, all the credit card debt, everything, mortgage debt, and so on, is just sort of wiped clean.
Oh, in other words, that's kind of like Building 7 at 9/11.
Yes.
Did I say that out loud? Yes, I did. Okay.
For once, it benefits us, the average Joe.
Okay. Anyway, great thing. Well, I'll tell you what you ought to do is do an online poll over on epautos.com and then start a GoFundMe, because we have people do GoFundMes for all sorts of stupid stuff. Okay. Yeah. So this is not stupid. Yep. This would be, and maybe see if people are generous to you. Okay.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. You know, I'm reluctant to do stuff like that.
I know.
It's worth a thought.
All right. And by the way, what was the latest article or the latest vehicle that you reviewed recently? What was setting you on fire?
Oh, it was the Mazda CX-30. I think we touched on it briefly last week. If you'd like to chat about that a little bit.
Yeah, sure. What did you think overall on the Mazda?
Yeah, well, you know, again, it's another crossover, but at least it's a somewhat different crossover. And it has a number of things about it that I think are laudable. Including the fact that its standard engine doesn't need a turbo, because it's an appropriately sized engine. It comes with a 2.5-liter 4 instead of a sub-2-liter 4 like a lot of the others in the class. For example, the VW Taos, which I like. It's a nice enough little crossover, but it has a 1.5-liter engine, so, you know, it has to be turbocharged.
You know, the Rabbit back in the 1970s had a 1.5, for crying out loud. I'll bet it was a lot lighter, too, in those days.
Much lighter. Mm-hmm. Much lighter. So it doesn't need a turbo, which is really nice, and it comes standard with all-wheel drive, whereas in most of the other cars in that class, crossovers in that class, it's an extra cost option that adds significantly to the price. Now, if you want more power, it does offer a turbocharged version of the 2.5-liter engine, and that pumps it up to 250 horsepower, which I think is the strongest engine available in the class. So it's a really appealing little thing, and the more fundamentally appealing thing about it is that, like all Mazda vehicles, it's actually somewhat fun to drive. Mazda has become, in my opinion, kind of like what BMW used to be back in the 80s, for those who can remember, when it was a company that really cared about the driving experience. And, you know, people who wanted a sophisticated car that was just enjoyable and engaging to drive wanted to get a BMW. Mazdas are like that today.
Yeah. I had a 1985 735i back in the day, too, at that point. And even though I got to tell you, that car was so expensive to repair, and I eventually had to let it go because it was just so expensive to do repairs on it. But, boy, I'll tell you, when that thing ran, that straight six BMW – oh. Just a beautiful, smooth machine. Loved that car every day.
Yep.
All right.
Mazdas are like that. They've got this nice yin-yang balance of ride compliance and cornering tenacity. They really make an effort to make their vehicles – feel like Miatas, because they understand that not everybody can have a two-seater car. It's not very practical. So they try to imbue some of that Miata-ness into all of their vehicles.
Yeah. Hey, why don't I ask you, how much longer do we have? I'm going to shift gears away from you, no pun intended, because we have manual transmissions on this show, okay?
Yep.
manual verbal transmissions. How about the Ram Classic, the Ram 1500
yeah.
Classic? I was reading the other day that they're just shutting down that line, and they're going to be laying off some 2,500 people. Stellantis is shutting that down. And this was not because people weren't buying it, right? I just want to be sure that I'm clear about
that. Oh, absolutely. In fact, the opposite. It just runs counter to the new corporate direction of the corporate overlords at Stellantis, which have gone all in on this electrification thing. And so it's kind of embarrassing for them, I guess, to keep these V8-powered, old-school kinds of trucks around. They've got to go.
But everybody was buying them hand over fist, right?
Well, yeah, it was one of the last remaining traditional half-ton truck, with a V8 engine and 8-foot bed, and you could get it with a regular cab. The current Ram, it's a nice truck, but they do not offer it with a regular cab, and you can't even get it with an 8-foot bed anymore, I don't think.
And it was a relatively economical truck as far as the cost, right?
For people who need a truck that can actually do work, it was a whole lot less expensive than the new Ram. It's like all the other ones. It's a gigantic Wurlitzer that will set you back $50,000-$60,000 on the low end.
That cracks me up. When you call it gigantic Wurlitzer, it reminds me like a jukebox, right? Jukebox.
Well,
lots
it's
of,
true, isn't it?
Yeah, lots of lights, bells and whistles, things like that. Yeah.
That's fine if you find that stuff entertaining. But if you're, a guy who, works and you need a vehicle that you're going to use for work, who needs all that stuff? And more finally, who wants to pay for all that stuff?
Eric Peters is with me, automotive journalist at epautos.com. You have a question, comment on anything we've been talking about, or anything involving vehicles, you got a question. And maybe you're looking at something, too. Maybe you're looking at importing a 1991, what was it, a Toyota 4Runner T, something
like
that?
Oh, no, Land Cruiser 70.
Land Cruiser 70, there we go. Yeah, that kind of thing. Let's talk about it, 770-5633. This is the Bill Myers Show. Have your taxes gotten
on Bedliner?
This is the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Call Bill now, 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
652, Eric Peters, automotive journalist, and time to turn it over to you now. If you have questions or comments on everything transportation-oriented, maybe you're looking at something. And Bob, you wanted to talk about those Japanese domestic imports, right? What are you thinking?
Yes, I do. Good morning, Bill. Good morning, Eric. Eric, we live in Oregon, and we have a Portland, Oregon left coast that is a port, and a lot of those JD imports come in up through Portland. Mm-hmm. So check out Portland Craigslist on them, and if you find one you like, come over and visit me and Bill. We'll drive you up to Portland, and you could drive one home. And as a side gig with the right-hand drive, if you need to, you could always be a postal rural carrier and subcontract.
That's right.
I hadn't thought about that. That's actually a really good point.
Good point. And thanks for the call there, Bob. By the way, is there any problem with the legality of right-hand drive? Are they legal everywhere? Is it any problem?
Yeah, they're totally legal. These are, they're grandfathered in at this point. That's why, we're going back to the 90s. Because at this point, I think they're over 30 years old, and so you're allowed to have them. Isn't it wonderful to live in a free country where you're allowed to have things?
Yes, I like that, where everything not permitted is required. All right, let me go to line three. Good morning, you're on with Eric Peters. Who's this? Welcome.
Welcome to YouTube. Deplorable Patrick here. Bless me, talk show, for I have sinned.
Oh, no. What happened?
I had like five vehicles, and I let my girlfriend say, you got to get rid of some of these. And I sold a lovely, lovely 74 Dodge pickup, half ton, with a slant six and a four speed with overdrive and fourth. And that truck, the only thing you could criticize was the door latches sometimes would malfunction. But I even had on hand a header and a four-barrel manifold for it. And that car, you could jump in that car, which I did and went to L.A., never bat an eye, and that truck is gone. I sold it. And
you sold it because a girlfriend told you to sell it? Really?
I'm trying to cleanse my soul here.
Yeah. Well, join the club. I think we're all members, aren't we, Bill? Haven't you done the same at some point in your life?
Yeah, at some point. It's either that item or me. Yeah, everybody has had that conversation at some point. But I'll tell you what, all right, since I was baptized Catholic, I'll give you the little, you know, just
absolution.
Go out there, some absolution, go out there and, I don't know, go find a muscle car to add to your collection, okay?
I
anoint your head with 80-90 gear oil.
There we go. Thanks, Patrick. Good hearing from you. 770-5633. Let me grab line 4. Good morning. Hi, who's this? Welcome.
My name is Paul. Hey, had a love you guys on Wednesday mornings, by the way. Learned a lot about EVs from you guys.
Oh, great. And, glad to hear that.
Just had a quick question for you guys. I've always been a Tundra guy. Always had one for a work truck, started with a T100 and 2004 Tundra with the 4.8 liter V8, best vehicle I've ever owned. And I also have a 2017 with the 5.7 liter. And so we've been throwing around the idea of a new Tundra. And I'm just trying to get you, I want to get you guys' opinion on that. I don't feel like they're the vehicle they used to be. As far as bulletproof, longevity, never a worry, that sort of thing. And we're a little afraid to pull the trigger on, you know, a 2024 just because of the small engines with the turbos being taxed and so on.
Paul, we were talking about that, I think, last week, Eric. Now, was it the Tundra we were speaking of or a different Toyota model?
No,
do you recall?
Tundra with the new turbo, twin turbocharged 3.4. Engine, and Toyota, and this is just unprecedented for Toyota, has had to recall more than 100,000 of them to replace the engine for some as yet not fully disclosed problem either with the design or the manufacturing of them. And that's just, that's appalling that happened to Toyota and to this vehicle. So I would urge caution, and if you're needing to get a new or replace the vehicle that you have, why not just shop around for a lightly used 2 or 3 year old Tundra? That would be my recommendation, because I amen what you said. The older models are absolutely bulletproof. They're wonderful vehicles. You can't go wrong with one of those.
Got it. So you would go and shop for the 5.7 liter. Is
absolutely.
What you're
recommending? I go get a 22 or a 21 that still has the 5.7 V8.
Yeah, the 5.7 is still bulletproof. And, you know, the main issue is that almost any time when you are the first year of a major change or a major new engine, there are almost always some problems, aren't there, Eric? I mean, they never really
iron them all out. But this is catastrophic. We're not talking about some annoying little problem that makes you take your new vehicle back to the dealership because they have to fix this or fix that. We're talking about replacing the engine.
Yeah.
In brand new vehicles.
Yeah, that's a tough one, Paul. So, he'd recommend maybe looking older until they get this figured out. Okay?
Got it. Thanks, guys.
All right. Hey, appreciate the call. 770-5633. Let me go back to line 2 now. Hi, you're on with Eric Peters. Peters, rather.
Hey.
Good morning.
Hey, this is David. How are you doing?
Doing fine, David. What are you thinking?
Hey, just, I'm not a mechanic, but I do a lot of driving. I need a truck. And I bought a 2019 Dodge, the classic Ram with the 3.7 liter motor in it.
Mm-hmm.
And is that rated a pretty good truck? I love it just because I get, 19 around town and 22 on the road, and it runs like a top. Is that a good model to have?
The truck itself is good. Did you get the e-torque system with the V6?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, if you didn't, then you're in luck.
Oh.
No, okay, so don't want the e-torque.
Yeah, the e-torque system, which is a kind of a mild hybrid system that they have as an option with that engine, is designed to shut the engine off constantly, you know, kind of like an automated stop-start, but a more sophisticated version of that.
It does.
There have been some problems with that. But no, the truck itself is really good. And I think it's a 3.6 V6, actually. It's a good engine.
Okay.
It's been around for a long time.
And one other thing. I just got rid of, I had a 2011 Ford F-150 twin turbo. I absolutely loved the truck. It had tons of power.
But at 200, and it's, I took good care of it, at 220,000, the timing chain started making noise. The transmission between 8 to 10 miles an hour would make a thump. And number six cylinder, the pressure had dropped. And I got rid of it because it needed new transmission and new motor, and it wasn't worth it. But I love the truck, but I don't think I will ever get another twin turbo after the experience with that.
Well, I wouldn't either, because they're fundamentally disposable for the reason that you just described. You know, you get to this sort of event horizon where it's just not worth putting the money into it. You're talking about, I mean, I don't know if you got an estimate about how much it would have cost to replace the transmission and the engine, but I bet it was probably something on the line of, I don't know, 50 plus percent the value of the truck itself.
It was almost the entire value. It was $15,000. Yep. The motors are impossible to get. They're on back order. Yeah. I found a used one with 90,000 miles on it that they wanted almost the same price as a new motor. So, I needed to put $15,000 into it and had $220,000. And I've had tons of F-150s, and I'd get 400,000 miles out of them. But that was late 90 models, and I loved them. The new ones, they're fun to drive, but, I learned a lot.
Yeah, exactly. They're great until they stop working.
Yeah, great until they're not. Yeah, I really appreciate the call. Thanks for checking in there. You know, we were wondering, I think we've had a number of years now, Eric, because we were always wondering about, boy, they sure are putting an awful lot of turbochargers. Because turbochargers used to be something that were either on a big rigs, you know, big rigs, you know, for that kind of power. Or they were on sports cars, right?
Yep.
It was done, and you knew that there was going to be a penalty for the turbocharger as far as wear or longevity. Everybody knew that because you're asking
pressure
more.
Pressure and heat.
Yep, pressure and heat and challenges here. We're starting to get a longer, I guess, record of what's happening as they take smaller engines and just boost them crazily, right? I think we're starting to see more of that now.
The problem is compounded by a couple of factors. It's one thing to put a turbo on, say, a V6 in the 3-liter-ish displacement that has, say, 6 pounds of boost going, you know, as a power adder. But now they're putting turbos that are running 15-plus pounds of boost on 1.2, 1.3-liter engines. You know, and that's a lot to expect, a little engine like that to suffer over any substantial amount of time. And I would stay away from one of those things because there's just not much you can do to prevent that engine from having a short life.
Yeah, that reminds me, we're seeing a lot of that with the heavily turbocharged 3 cylinders that are in a lot of General Motors products right now, those Chevy Traxes and things like that.
And you can build a block to be heavier, but you know, bearing surfaces are a certain size, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's only so much you can do within the confines of a physical space. So this small bearing surface has to take that heavy, heavy pounding, that load, and inevitably that's just going to result in a premature end for that engine.
All right, we'll grab a couple more and then cut Eric loose for his day job here. I'll get back to mine too. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
God bless KMED. It's Joel.
Hey, Joel. What's up?
Well, we got a 74 Dodge Cub Cab, which has got a 413 or 400 motor in it, and we just put new fan belts on there and new valve cover gaskets, and it's got a work bed on it that's 6 foot wide and 8 feet long. The whole truck is over 20 feet long.
Wow.
And, so I'm reserving it so I can – it's only got 110,000 on the motor.
It's barely broken in. Barely broke it in there, Joel. Barely broke it in. Good vehicle. But, you see, that's another example – no matter what, he could get that repaired. He could repair that one way or the other.
Yeah, and most of the body panels, you know, rust is an issue with those older vehicles, but the nice thing is that most of those body panels unbolt. So you can just unbolt the rusty one, bolt on a new one, and as far as the frame, you know, unless it's really gone far south, if you know how to weld, you can always fix that too.
And out here on the West Coast, we don't see quite as much, we don't use salt here, you know, out here. So we don't have the cancer like you do in Virginia. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Let me go to a final call here. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Hi, this is Randy calling.
Hi, Randy.
Question for Eric. I mean, what would be the wisdom of somebody needing a new car, just going back and buying one of the classics, you know, the 60s, early 70s cars, even maybe one that's been restored and is in good shape, and just using that as a daily driver? I mean, is there any wisdom to doing that?
You had an article
on
that.
There's a lot of wisdom in doing that. Where do we even begin?
Yeah.
First of all, more than likely, you will be able to get more car for your money, you know, unless you're going for something that's highly desirable, like a classic Mustang or a Camaro or something like that. You know, if you go back and just look for, oh, I don't know, like a four-door Malibu from the 70s, say, nice big family car, something like that, and make a few judicious upgrades if need be. Maybe put on one of the aftermarket throttle body fuel injection systems so that you don't have to worry about fiddling with the carburetor. If it needs an overdrive, you can put an overdrive in it for relatively not much money, and now you've got a vehicle that will drive and feel very much like a modern car without all of the stuff that makes modern cars so unappealing.
What do you think about that?
Well, that's certainly something to think about.
Yeah, and there are ways to do it. But now, to do it economically, though, Eric, you wouldn't want to be going for the exotics, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, no, right? that's an indulgence. You know, if, mm-hmm. obviously, if you want to get, you know, a cool old muscle car, you're going to pay top dollar for it. But as I said, you can get any number of what were considered sort of just grocery getters, typically, you know, four doors, wagons, things like that, that are very practical, very useful vehicles, and also pretty fun to drive as well, that are also easily repairable by you, and you're going to pay less to insure it probably mm-hmm. because its value won't be $50,000 as a new vehicle's value might be.
All right.
And there's so many other reasons to like it. You know, the car's not going to be spying on you, and it's not going to be correcting your driving either.
And there, even back in the 1970s, by the way, thank you for the call. I can think of one car that I had when I left Ohio and moved out to the West Coast in 1980 when I got out of high school, got out of radio school. I had a 1977 Chevy Impala. It was my father's company car that I ended up buying from the company at that point. And I think it was like $1,500 at that time, if I recall. And that was one of those cars I look back at and wish that I just hung on to it because it was so easy to repair and so reliable. You still see them, you know, around here on the road, out on the West Coast.
Small block Chevy, right? It probably had a 350?
Yeah, I think it was a 305. I think it was a 305.
Same basic thing.
Yeah, and it was, you know, very simple, and I think it still had a carburetor at that point. But yeah, put a throttle body fuel injection on it now for a few $100, and you got great drivability with an old vintage car.
Sure. And you know, frankly, you don't even need that. You know, I know people are sometimes intimidated by carburetors, but they really ought to give it a try. Properly set up, once it's been cleaned and set correctly, a Rochester Quadrajet, which was a great carburetor, will give responsiveness, drivability, cold start performance, all of that that's very comparable to fuel injection without any electronics.
Yep, there are ways to do it, for sure. Eric, always a good talk, and we appreciate you being on here. And what do you think is going to be the review for next week you're looking at?
Oh, God help me. I know, Bill. Guess what's coming?
What?
Volvo XC40 Recharge EV.
Yay! I can't wait to hear about it. So we'll get the review next Wednesday. Eric, thanks so much for checking in from epautos.com. Okay?
You bet. Thank you for having me, Bill.
All right. Great. It's 8 after 7. This is KMED and KMED HD1 Eagle Point Medford, KBXG Grants Pass. Ran a little late. We'll catch up on some news. And State Senator Linthicum joins us for a few.